Joe Dancy with the University of Oklahoma, Oklahoma College of Law, Energy Center. I'm the executive director.
Joe Dancy joining us this week. We're going to talk a little bit about how some of these shale plays connect. You know, I love Shale Play USA. And, of course, we got the Scoop, the Stack, the Eagle Ford, the Permian, those types of things, which Continental Resources out of Oklahoma is known for, but also the Bakken up in North Dakota, which they might be more known for that, too. Who knows? But Mr. Joe Dancy just kind of reviewed a little bit on what they have going on. We also want to talk about the Spears report and then some new developments or observations in frac stages. So, Mr. Dancy, how are you doing today?
We're doing really good today, Jason. Thank you.
Well, let's start off with Continental Resources a little bit. Just kind of, you know, obviously you're not a stockbroker by any means, so we're just talking about observations here. But kind of what do you see have going on with them? They seem to be making the news a lot lately, whether it be outsourcing stuff to China, whether it be shifting some leases around, that sort of thing. Kind of from that 5,000-foot view, what are you seeing?
Well, Jason, you know, they're a good company. I'm actually at the University of Oklahoma. I'm the director of the Energy Center, so I get to see, and I follow, I get, you know, two or three really good reports every day on companies, industry trends, analysts, and the last week, crossing my desk, I've gotten a number of reports on Continental Resources, and they're, of course, the Oklahoma City company. Again, I'm not a stockbroker. I'm not recommending the company. They're a very good corporate citizen. They're a big supporter of OU. But what the analysts say, and this is sort of what I'm reporting, is I'm looking at what the analysts are saying about their drilling activity. And what they're saying is that the Bakken play for Continental, their acreage, their initial production rates, their completion techniques, everything looks really good in the Bakken formation. And, you know, that the firm, because of the attractive acreage, you know, looks like this is an attractive firm, an attractive play. And a couple of the analysts also noted that in Oklahoma, we have, of course, the Scoop and the Stack. And they noted that the Continental Scoop wells were as expected, but some of their Stack wells were a little bit disappointing in that they were more expensive to drill than expected. And the initial production rates weren't quite as high as the analyst had estimated earlier. Now, I don't know. I mean, these are third-party analysts. I won't name them. They're well-known analysts that if I, you know, said their names or the banks they're with, you would recognize them. But, you know, just reporting, I think last time we talked here a month or so ago, you know, I was noting, you know, the activity in the Bakken and the fact that as oil prices increase from, you know, Lord knows they've been so low the last couple of years, as they increase, this is going to make the Bakken production much more attractive, as well as companies, as well as assets up there, because it's a little bit higher cost province to explore in, partly because of the weather. It's like, God, you know, when you're fracking and it's 20 below, you know, number one, it's hard to get crews. Number two, it's hard to keep everything warmed up. When you're down here in the Permian Basin, you know, it might be 30 degrees, but it's a lot easier to frack when you're in the Permian at 30 degrees than, you know, in the Bakken at 10 below in a snowstorm. And just the expenses up there, too, to get the equipment, et cetera. And I'm not a petroleum engineer, but I just know, you know, talking to them, they say it's easier to run a crew in the Eagle Ford or the Bakken or the Scoop and Stack than it is in North Dakota. And a lot of that is just due to the weather. And Lord knows, I know, you know, we talked earlier last week, and it was snowing up there. And, you know, it's 60 degrees in Oklahoma and sunny today, which, you know, Lord, I'm happy I'm down here. But anyway, the Bakken looks really positive from what the analysts are saying and from what I've seen in other reports over the last month. Again, I'm not recommending the stocks, but it's positive for North Dakota.
You did mention a little bit of the Scoop and the Stack. I had Mr. Henry on from Continental last year during, I want to say it was last March, actually. And they talked about the Scoop and the Stack and some of the expectations they had and kind of how it was going to be a good secondary play, subsidiary play, because some of the things you mentioned about the weather elements are true. There are times that, you know, it not only slows down the joints, but it also slows down just the whole the whole energy extraction flow when you add in the geography as well. So you got the weather elements and the geography. So I totally understood what they were talking about, some of these southern plays that are a little bit more geographically, I guess, advantageous, as well as just the whole flow of things, you know, when you're talking about $40 to $60 oil, where there's, that's tough. That's a tough spot, because you want to keep the activity going, but at the same time, sometimes you're not making any money on things. So when I hear, you know, the expectations weren't quite as projected, elaborate a little bit more on that. Did they lose money? Do you know? Did they at least make money? Because, you know, obviously, if you break even, that's the best thing that can happen. But, you know, if you make money, that's even better, I guess. But you know what I mean. Did when you mentioned they weren't as good? Go ahead.
Well, I think actually Continental, what the analyst said anyway is the when you have a play, you estimate, you know, going forward, what your initial production rate's going to be. You know what your wells are going to cost to drill, so you can actually determine, you know, what your returns are. And they said the scoop is coming in as expected for Continental, as well as, you know, other players, which is real positive. The Bakken's coming in as expected. Apparently, the stack play, it's becoming more expensive, and they really didn't elaborate whether it was just service costs going up, or whether, you know, there's more equipment you have to put down hole, or there's additional fracking cost or whatever. But the wells were more expensive, and the initial production rates, which is, you know, you turn the well on, you get a flow back, were not what they had expected. They were close, but they were still, you know, 10 or 15%, as I recall, below, you know, what they'd projected. So going forward, as, you know, an analyst, if you drill some wells and, you know, not what you expected, you redo the model and you take the latest information, you put it in there. So when you increase your costs and decrease your initial production rate in barrels, and if you keep the cost, you know, the revenue, the price deck, what you're going to sell, in place, your return goes down. You're still, I guarantee you, Continental is still making money in the stock. It's a very attractive stack. It is a perfect, very attractive play from an economic standpoint, from what I've been told. That being said, as you know, when it's $40 a barrel, I mean, one of the questions I get, you know, quite often as the executive director at University of Oklahoma, and when I talk on economics, is, you know, what is a fair price for oil? And you sort of mentioned it. Between $60 and $70 per barrel, I think most players in the shale plays, whether it be the Bakken, the Eagle Ford, the Permian, the Scoop, the Stack, you know, wherever, the Niobrara, they can make a reasonable return and maintain a reasonable workforce at those prices. The problem is, Jason, and this is pretty shocking, when I went out in December to the Permian Basin and talked to some operators, and they took me out to some wells, they said, you know, it's still incredibly tough to get fracking crews. And because service companies, when it's $40 a barrel, those service companies, you know, really didn't make any money. They couldn't upgrade their equipment. They couldn't add people. They were laying people off. They were stacking. And now, as things recover, it's difficult to get the equipment. You get upgraded. The fracking, when you take the amount of horsepower, the amount of sand, and the amount of wear you have, and as the wells get longer and you're using more water and more sand, the equipment really takes a beating. It's like taking your car and taking in a 500-mile NASCAR race, and, you know, when it's done, it's going to need some work. And it's the same thing with fracking equipment. If you don't have the capital and you don't have the demand, and they haven't either the last two or three years until the last year when prices are recovering, it's been difficult to upgrade that equipment. It's difficult now. I mean, this is what they tell me. It's difficult to get frac crews. And, you know, when you get a frac crew, they said they generally like to, you know, you want to get, if you drill a $7 or $10 million well, you want to make sure you get a frac crew you feel comfortable with. And they said, once you get a frac crew, if you can tie them up and you're happy with them, you know, you want to keep them busy. So you'd like to drill a number of wells, and then they have them, you know, come in frac one after the other. which is an interesting strategy. So anyway, that's what I've heard.
You know, you bring up, in my opinion, one of the most undertold stories in the Bach, or in the one of the most undertold stories in the shale plays going on right now, and that is the changing workforce. And what I mean by that is the jobs have changed. The old slinging chains of the roughnecks, those jobs are, you know, virtually gone. And you've got a more, I don't know if it's a white collar, blue collar hybrid type of a worker, but there's the nomadic portion of it is gone. You know, that kind of that traveling nomadic is seemed to be gone by the wayside, and they're going with more hub locations as opposed to the Carnival. And the jobs are getting so specialized. It just seemed like over the last 12 months, that's been the main push in oil and gas right now, is trying to fill the workforce with the proper employees so that they can get the starter pistol almost ready to go, because it seems like they got the jobs lined up. But in order to get those jobs going in a succession, in order to make it so that these workers have, you know, years of work, so they don't have to worry about if oil prices go up and down and et cetera. Are you following me a little bit on that, the change of the workforce out there in the oil and gas industry?
Yeah, a little bit. And I know there's a shortage, and I got a number of people that ask me, you know anybody that, you know, we have openings, and the people, and they weren't service company, but I mean, Continental actually about 6 months ago was looking for an internal auditor, and they emailed me on LinkedIn and said, hey, if you know any, you know, can you post this? We're looking for an internal auditor. We know you have a bunch of followers on LinkedIn. So I posted their job posting, and it's tough to get people, whether, you know, it's a cyclical business. And I guess going to your point more so is, you know, you go back and look historically, and the crude oil price, and actually natural gas prices, have been much more volatile in the last 10 years than they were before. It's always a tough business because everybody competes against each other. I mean, you go back when they were drilling the Oklahoma City field, you know, everybody was drilling wells and you're producing as much as you can. And, you know, essentially when you have full competition, your profit, you know, eventually goes to zero and you have the cyclicality. But when you have prices going from, you know, $110 down to $26 and back to $40 and then to $50, and then you have, you know, we're at what, $60 now or $55, or, you know, I didn't look this morning, but when you're a planner for a company or an employee, you know, it's very difficult to plan, to allocate capital. And I actually tell my students, both my business students and law students, if you're going into the energy business, one of the things you ought to want to focus on, besides energy finance and energy law and regulatory law, is you need to know something about financing, like bankruptcy. You need to know a little bit about debtor creditor rights, because at some point, an employee law also, because at some point you're going to be expanding, and you or your entity, or, you know, someone you're dealing with is going to have financial problems, and you're going to have to, you know, lay people off. You're going to have to deal with the banks. You have to restructure your debt. You might have to go through bankruptcy or the entities you deal with. And if you just have a basic knowledge of that, you don't have to be a super expert on bankruptcy, but you should know, you know, the basic concepts that are involved in trying to protect yourself and let me make it real clear, Jason. This is not because a lot of these companies are mismanaged. It's when, you know, when oil's $60 a barrel, and I've seen some reports, I don't put much credence in them, but they say that, you know, there's so much oil that's going to flow out of the Permian and the Scoop and Stack and the Bakken that we're going back to $30 a barrel. So if you're planning a business at $60 a barrel and unexpectedly it goes to $30, you clearly have issues, you know, servicing your employees, your debt, providing services, upgrading your equipment, you know, keeping your wells going. And it's not a fault of management. It's more a fault that the markets are so volatile today, which is a function really of OPEC has not controlled their incremental production as well as we did in the United States, Texas and Oklahoma and other states, you know, back when we had the incremental production available to sort of moderate prices.
Let's talk about the Spears report a little bit. First off, just a quick overview of what the Spears report is and what you've seen from its findings.
Yeah, the Spears report is a report. They're a consulting company out of Tulsa. They've been around for at least 30 years. They are they generally provide information dealing with well performance, well service trends, because that's their clients. And what they found, and this is a report they just issued in the last 2 weeks, is that if you go back to 2014 and you see how well most wells, unconventional wells, have performed year over year, the efficiencies have increased. For example, in 2014, say, the average initial production rate was 500 barrels per day. The increase to 2014 to 2015 would be something in the extent of 20%. So you, in 2015, you would get a well that's 600 barrels per day. And so each year you get, you know, a 10 to 15% increase in initial production. And as you know, the more oil you get out earlier, the more cash you get in the bank, and these wells decline really quickly. So the difference between a 500 barrel a day well and a 900 barrel a day well or 800 barrel a day well, you know, is substantial as far as just the reserves you recover. And what they found using real data, using unconventional reserves, is that nationwide, the initial production rate for the first time has sort of peaked in 2017. So no longer do we have wells that increased 10% from a year ago. You know, what they said is it actually declined a little bit. And their speculation is, you know, the wells are getting longer. So it's not these wells, not because we're drilling shorter wells. We're using more sand. We're using more water. The completion techniques are improved. The stages have been put closer together. And they said, really, they can't get the stages much closer together when you frack, because you'll have frack interference within a one given wellbore, and you don't want that. There's enough problems, they say, between frack interference between well number one and well number two, much less between stages. So what they said is, in their opinion, potentially, that a lot of producers have high-graded or taken their best acreage and completed those wells over the last 3 years, and now we are moving to what they call tier two or tier three type of acreage. It is, you know, it's reserves or formations that are not quite as attractive as the tier one acreage. And this sort of, you know, and I don't know, these are two sharp bulbs. They're really smart. They're very well respected in industry. I saw, you know, John Spears spoke here at Oklahoma City Petroleum Engineering meeting 2 months ago, just on the general outlook for oil and gas prices, which he says is going to be pretty stable around $60. But what they say is essentially this high grading. I've heard this before from executives like Mark Papa, who is an executive. I think he runs now. I think he sold his company to Exxon and was one of the pioneers in the fracking revolution. And actually, he has come out with some comments that the industry overall, you know, may have used a lot of the best inventory in tier one acreage, and that going forward, we're not going to see the wells, the initial production rates increase. And the implication, Jason, is staggering, because if you take most analysts, they sort of expect the average well is going to increase continually, you know, 10% per year because of technology, because of, just like it has the last 3 or 4 or 5 years. And if you take the actual data and look for the last year and there's no increase, what this says is we're going to have to drill a lot more wells to keep production in the United States growing and stable than what many analysts think. And again, this is, you hear some analysts saying, you know, if we keep drilling wells like we have, we're going to have so much oil, it's going to get to $30 a barrel. We'll be, you know, exporting we already export more than a million barrels per day, but we're going to export, you know, triple what we're doing now. And according to the Spears, and according to the last presentation that I saw from Mr. Papa, which is actually, I think he made it in November or December at a, I think it was a Merrill Lynch conference, you know, their argument is correct, and we have taken our best acreage, or most companies have taken their best acreage and already developed them, and I've heard sort of secondhand that a lot of the infill wells, they call them sort of child wells. If you drill the first one, it's the parent, and the second wells are the child, or the third and fourth. The child wells are not as good as expected. I was at a conference a week or two ago, and I said, you know, the childs are sort of stunted, and I said, now, I guess I've got to sort of avoid that. I don't want to be controversial talking about the parents and stunted child wells, but the wells are not as good as expected in some areas. This is specifically the Permian Basin where I've heard this. I haven't heard it in the Bakken, but I assume it may apply in the Bakken. It may apply in the Skeetstack. I don't know. But in the Permian Basin, they said some of the investors and some of the finance folks are a little bit concerned because they expected, you know, the child to be at least as good, if not better, than the parent, because you have additional time, you have additional technology, you would go into these infill wells to develop the additional acreage, and what they found is, apparently, the parent well, you know, when you frack this stuff, the interference or the effect is covering a larger area than, you know, maybe the engineers or geologists thought, because again, if you look at the amount of fluid they stick in there, the amount of sand, and they stick a whole, you know, some of these wells are a whole, you know, unit train, 100 hopper cars full of sand, depending on where you're at. And it's an incredible amount of fracking going on. And if that's also true, going forward, we're going to have to drill a lot more wells. So the Spears, in their report, actually, I heard they had an interview a week ago that they posted on the internet. They said if that's true, their clients are going to be very, very happy, because service companies, obviously, you know, you supply the rigs, you supply the tubing, and if we want to maintain our current production rate in the United States, we're going to have to drill a lot more wells, use a lot more services, which means it's going to be a very robust market for those companies that, you know, sort of unexpected. They're busy now, but they're going to be a lot busier, according to the Spears report. If you buy off, and again, I'm just the messenger reporting what I've heard as a expert. I respect these folks, and I wouldn't bet against them. Now, whether they're right or not, I'm not sure, but they do very good analysis.
Well, I think what you're saying is already happened, to be honest. I mean, when I take a look at the Bakken, they had similar things where the curve was a lot sharper after the initial frack was done, to where their refracks were just quick, being done quick and getting, you know, maybe not as much, and the technology maybe need to be tweaked a little bit. So that's kind of what I saw, was in order to keep that million barrels a day, a lot of these refracts were happening. And, you know, they know them pretty well, but there's some fine-tuning still that needs to be done, because you go every inch and, you know, it's different under there. So that to me is kind of what I heard. And through the last few years, a lot of those service companies, they had to sharpen their pencils and get really tight with some of their pricing. I think the switch is going to flip a little bit, to where I see more technology companies now having to sharpen their pencils, because they had a good past 3 years. And just what I've observed with the ebb and the flow of the oil and gas industry, the bear and the bull market and that sort of thing, these science projects are starting to show how they can save money. And in order to keep drilling now, There's going to be a little bit of sharpening some pencils. So I think I agree with you that the service companies are going to see a little bit of a boom, a little micro pocket, if you will. But I think the technology companies might have to take a look at their pricing. Am I out of line for speculating on that side?
No, it's actually a good observation. And it's actually it's interesting you bring up the refract issue, because now it's been 2 or 3 months since I talked to one of my experts that comes in and lectures to my class, and actually he's coming in 3 weeks. And the last time he was in my class, he was talking about, he's an ex-executive with Devon here in Oklahoma City. He's actually teaching now at the University of Oklahoma, but he's a petroleum engineer. And what he said is, you know, if they figure out the technology on refracking and go into these wells that are already drilled, and you know, if they use the right formula, because it could be a real game changer economically on a positive side, where you get a lot more oil out or gas out than you expected. But he goes, you know, they're still working with refracts and the design of refracts. It's something, Jason, I really haven't studied, and I haven't really seen any good analyst reports, and maybe I ought to be looking for them, because in his opinion, he goes, you know, with the party who figures out the refract question, you go in and frack it for the second time. He goes, if they figure it out correctly, he goes, it could be a big game changer. And he goes, not only for the company, but he goes, the problem is everybody, you know, once you figure out the technology, if it's really positive and really, you know, you get a huge return on, he goes, you're going to have another flood of oil that is unexpected, which will really probably depress prices. But, it, you know, from what I see in the market, it hasn't happened. If you go in and refract, I'm sure, you know, it is economical to do that, but you're not getting a huge return like you do in the initial drilling. And that's just me, again, speculating, reporting what I hear from third parties. I'm sort of like the parrot who sits in the cage all day and listens to people talk, and then I try to figure it out for myself. But then they'll teach my students that here's what the laws and regulations and finance, how it all works, and here's what I think's going on, and here's what I heard. But I will say, overall, for the domestic oil and gas business, both in the Bakken, both in Niobrara, in Permian, Scoop and Stack, the natural gas markets don't look really good. If you have oil production, that's where you want to be. And Eagle Ford, the oil portion of Eagle Ford looks pretty decent. I can say I think the industry looks really good going forward for the next year or two, because I think prices, I will agree with Spears and some other people, that prices between, you know, $55 and $75 a barrel look real positive. And I guess we haven't talked about prices. We actually put out a report about a month ago, where we increased our, because of demand and supply trends and some other things, we increased our forecast for West Texas Intermediate from, I think it was $67 a barrel average in 2018 to $72 a barrel. And of course, you know, that is high compared to investment banks. On the other hand, there are some reports out there, like Goldman Sachs actually has some sort of a higher price, at least towards the end of 2018. Raymond James is also, you know, has a higher price towards, I think their average, though, is a little bit below that for 2018. So we are on the high end, but I think when you look at the trends in demand and supply, and you look at the technology, it would not surprise me at all if we saw, if oil is above $72 a barrel, sometimes between July 4th in Christmas, because the trends are there, the growth is there, the economy's growing globally, and the flood of oil, and actually the inventories, the global inventories are coming down substantially. So I think it's going to be a very robust time, and I think actually you're going to have a very good Christmas in the Bakken. And if you don't, you can call me and I'll send you a card and a bottle of whiskey.